Good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome. You have got Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson, and we are in the house of the risen sun. And boy, it feels good here, doesn't it?
Good to be here.
It is good to be here. Bruce and I have been zipping through Gary Renard's newest book, The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, History of Mighty Companions. And actually, I guess we are getting kind of through it now.
It's two more chapters.
But, you know, it's really interesting to me, Bruce, because every week when we talk about these things and I read this book and I, you know, it's so weird because Gary Renard just doesn't seem to be the kind of person that, you know, that would have this depth of insight and depth I'm not knocking Gary. I love Gary, honestly. I absolutely adore Gary. But we were just talking the other day about a situation that happened a few years ago, there were a couple of teachers of A Course in Miracles who came out against Gary and wrote some really nasty articles in Miracles magazine about him. And it was really pretty shocking to you know, see these people who are like respected teachers in the Course community or some portion of the Course community saying these things about Gary, that, you know, he was a fraud and it was all made up and you know, it was impossible that these ascended masters could be coming around and talking to him, even though it very clearly says that very thing in the Manual for Teachers in A Course in Miracles. But that is, then the masters do appear to us and do talk to us. It's right there.
Well, it's just, to me, when you said respected, I was thinking, well, it just is a great example of how, you know, we're talking about a dualistic thought system where we are vacillating and ambivalent about this curriculum, because we respect two different thought systems, and that's every person in this world is a reflection of that. Now, the challenge, of course, is to gradually, if not quickly, transition our respect to just the one that makes sense in truth in eternity, which is that we're all completely innocent. You know, no one has thrown God under the bus, and we're all completely free of any taint from appearances and form, and those then become our classroom for looking at our wanting to condemn or otherwise judge unfairly based on appearances. Because, I mean, we're all kind of a motley crew in this space-time continuum, if you think about it. We're, you know, a ragtag fleet. Battlestar Galactica? Reference anyone? we're all just, you know, if you look at that level of form, it's all pretty funky, you know. We're all just, you know, unlikely messengers for a truth that transcends anything that we could possibly limit to the silly little forms that we seem to inhabit. And that includes our bodies and our personalities. And I think of that sometimes when I look in the mirror and think, what? I'm limiting myself to this? And anybody who else, I think, looks at the absurdity of the whole space-time dream, you know, will, with help from our inner kindness teacher, see it as an outrageously funny, you know, self-imposed, silly, unnecessary constraint that doesn't have any bearing on the truth of what we are. And that's, I think, what is the truth behind that, beyond the special love and the special hate, beyond the condemnations of the form and the specifics and all the specialness and substitutions we make in this world that really don't truly make us happy. We can see that there is, you know, with our inner vision, that there's a truth to all of us that transcends all that. And that's what I think leads us out of those condemning thoughts and back to the realization that we all have the same components, as Ken Wapnick pointed out so many times. We have the same decision-making mind that chooses between the two thought systems, you know, both completely 100% consistent, but one is just 100% completely insane and the other is completely sane. Yeah. And we choose between those all the time, don't we?
We do absolutely. Instant by instant. And mm-hmm. as you were talking, it just flashed into my mind, like the movie, Being John Malkovich.
Well, funny you should mention. Go ahead and say what you're going to say, because I have something to tie into it.
What you were saying was actually made me think of that movie, because that's what it is. We're all being this one thing. We're all being Donald Trump. We're all being, my next door neighbor. We're all being Bruce Rawls. We're all being Lynn Johnson. We're all being this, because there's really only one of us, and we're experiencing all the experience of all the characters in the dream at once, at this instant. And,
We're not conscious of that, of course, but that's the truth of what,
But we can become conscious of that. And that's what happens, is you become more and more and more conscious of the connection rather than the separation. You become more and more conscious of the sameness. Mm-hmm. And when, this is, it's huge for me. It's when I began really looking for the samenesses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And rejecting the exceptions.
Yeah.
Everything that said this person is different than me because this person has a different, you know, whatever, because, or these people, this person is better than that person because they're whiter or blacker or has more hair or whatever.
They're all people's front of Judea, Judean people's front distinctions is how I look at it. Yeah. I love that Monty Python skit from The Life of Brian where, you know, crazy body part, vendor wandering through the upper aisles of the Roman Colosseum in this movie, you know, says, "Are you the people's front of Judea?" And they say, "No, we're the Judean people's front." Or, you know, I got it backwards. But anyway, the point is that, you know, the distinction is an arbitrary and ridiculous one, but that's what we pride ourselves on being good at in this world. And we, you know, if ever since you're an infant, you know, you learn to discern what's your mother from your father, what's a person from a not person, you know, I mean, looking up in your crib at the little things dangling, you know, if you have a mobile and hanging over you, like different shapes and different things. And we think, and we get incredibly sophisticated and elaborate at making up a story that's just a giant holographic projection of an unconscious wish to be separate from perfect oneness.
Exactly. And we're just navigating with that. It's just crazy. So what was your John Malkovich?
Well, there's two movies actually that I thought of last night when my wife Nancy and a couple of friends up the street came by. We had a little taco evening and then we watched a movie on Amazon Prime called Zoe. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, check it out. Check it out. It's really wonderful. It reminded me of both the movie Her, which is Joaquin Phillips with the voice of Scarlett Johansson, which you haven't seen, it's also excellent. And also, you know, in one little scene in particular where there was multiple copies of this person, without giving too much away, it's basically about, futuristic, not so much dystopian, but in the sense of the physical environment, but dystopian in terms of the emotional, environment where, and you, with your appreciation of Westworld, I think Lynn would particularly enjoy this film, because it's basically where these, robotic, companions, for humans, basically start realizing that, you know, they're missing something by being, what do they call them? Synthetic. They're called synthetics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, at one point, this prototype named Zoe discovers toward the end of the film, spoiler alert, but anyway, that there's this whole room full of upgraded versions of the version of her that she's actually a prototype. And, anyway, but the whole dynamic, and there's a lot of stuff in there. There's like, did a core student write this? I mean, my gosh, it was really, I mean, the dialogue was amazing. Everything from forgiveness to special relationships, even though they didn't use those exact phrases in a lot of places. The concepts and the dialogue reflected a tremendous awareness of those issues and the attempt to try to make form do what it can never do, which is the content in the mind, including the closeness of relationships and of course Miracles, of course, pun intended, does address that. And it says, you sometimes seek the closeness in those physical relationships that obviously we're never going to be fulfilled or happy by a projection. A movie is not going to satisfy us. And this brilliant film, did a great job of raising a lot of those questions and didn't provide a whole lot of answers, but it did a lot of, wonderful presentation of the questions that Of Course in Miracles addresses. So if you haven't seen it, I recommend it. It's called Zoe. And it's on Amazon Prime. I'm not sure if it's anywhere else, but definitely worth watching. So
very cool. And, yeah. It's interesting to me, what you were talking about, that you reminded me of that, one scenario in Cloud Atlas, where they're synthetic I think they're clones. Okay. And she realizes, like, she becomes aware. She was the Korean person on Lost. I can't remember her name, but it's brilliant. And you've seen Cloud Atlas, I'm hoping.
It's been a long time, but yeah, I did see it a long time ago.
Yeah, it might be interesting to check it out. There are certain parts of it that are really, really informative to me. The difference between knowing you're a synthetic person, a synthetic being from your creation, basically, or thinking that you're human and finding out that you're synthetic.
Well, that's the whole point. Is this a people's front of Judea versus Judean people's front distinction that we're making? Because, there may have been difference in the underlying structure. But the content was still the same. And, anyway, it was just a really interesting.
Interesting. I love movie. It. Love it.
Very much reminded me of her and the little bit I've seen of Westworld and the John Malkovich movie. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. You'll love Westworld. I really encourage people to just watch the whole series from the beginning, both seasons. And, just if you're looking at it from entertainment wise, yeah, I guess it's entertaining. I didn't find myself being entertained by much of it other than, beautiful, the costumes and everything is beautiful and people are, everything is beautiful. But the discussion of what is consciousness? Mm-hmm. What am I? What is a human? It's so deep and just mind blowing, and I've watched them over and over and over. And I actually joined a couple of forums for Westworld, and I swear to Pete, all anybody's interested in is the action and the mystery of the story and stuff. I don't see anybody posting, wow. Something woke up in me when I saw this and I realized that the life I'm living is a lie or not true. Mm-hmm, I don't see a lot of people come into that realization from watching Westworld.
We've been studying a curriculum that makes that a very important part of our everyday experience, and particularly our forgiveness classroom for going home, seeing the banality and the absurdity and the silliness of the ego's curriculum and choosing against it and what doesn't look like an elephant, instead of the elephant or vice versa. So
that's good. That's how much our minds have been changed by this.
I totally get that.
It's amazing. So speaking of the importance of the mind, is the chapter in Gary's book, and I'll read okay, at the beginning of each chapter is a little quote or a little thing, and for some reason my Kindle put it on two pages, so It says, your mind and mine can unite in shining your ego away, releasing the strength of God into everything you think and do. Do not settle for anything less than this and refuse to accept anything but this as your goal. So that's pretty much a big startup. Your mind can unite in shining your ego away, releasing the strength of God into everything you can think and do. Don't settle for anything less and refuse to accept anything but this as your goal. How thoughtful that is to recognize, don't accept anything less. Why would I want some cheap thing when I could have the real thing?
Crazy. And we're all synthetic substitutes here as forms and as bodies and personas, you know?
Exactly. Oh my gosh. So yes, the world is an illusion. It doesn't really exist except in the dream that it is. However, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. And when it comes to the world, the Course gives you an added bonus. As you practice the Course's brand of forgiveness, which doesn't make it real, the Holy Spirit is removing unconscious guilt, which you didn't even know you had because it was unconscious from your mind. So as your mind is healed, you have less guilt. And when you have less guilt, you enjoy everything more. And Jesus says that straight up in the Course, that the guiltless mind cannot suffer.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, straight up, you know.
That's a non-trivial benefit for for anyone.
Yeah. A lot of people take exception to that, and they say, well, you know, because I'm suffering, does that mean I'm guilty? No, it doesn't mean you're guilty because you're suffering. If your mind is guiltless, you wouldn't have any reason to suffer.
Exactly.
Suffering is from the guilt. And as long as I believe that I am somehow in charge of what's happening, and I look around and see the disarray in the world and recognize that it's my fault and it's my problem and that I'm responsible for all these terrible things happening. You know, this is what the ego tells you. You know, there's a fine line between being responsible for what I see and being responsible for what is happening. Mm-hmm. Because
as you define what I see being what I'm choosing to identify with.
What I'm choosing to perceive. Mm-hmm. How I'm choosing to see this. I'm the one who decides how I see this. Mm-hmm. If I see this as cruelty, then I will suffer. If I see this as just an experience in a dream, then I can choose if I want to suffer. I can say, oh yeah, I want to feel bad about this. Or I can recognize, which is ridiculous, or I can recognize it's a dream and not suffer at all because no one's being harmed. Nothing's being harmed. Nothing is happening. It's just the robots in the dream that are acting out their roles. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's what forgiveness brings you, is to come to understand the truth about that. So that's, and this is a huge, this is my main teaching I'm doing right now, Bruce. So it's interesting to me that this is the first part of this. The main teaching I'm doing right now has to do with the topic of guilt and our perception of what responsibility is and our perception of, it all comes down to, if I think it's real, And I believe that it can hurt somebody, then I'm going to feel guilty because I'm the one who made it. Whether I recognize it on this level or not, somehow I think I should have done something about it. And, you know, since I was a small child, I've had this idea that, you know, children are starving in China. It's my fault because I didn't eat my beans, you know. It's ingrained in the ego mind that to see suffering and to take responsibility for it, and then to project even more attack. You know, today's lesson basically says that.
Yeah. It can be, but myself I crucify, exactly, yeah.
It's all about guilt. Mm-hmm. And what is the guilt for? And that when you recognize that the guilt is for nothing, that there, nothing has happened, that nothing is going on, it's just a movie, mm-hmm. then there's nothing to feel guilty about.
Yeah.
And you can let it go. And that's what the Holy Spirit helps you with that. That's
absolutely, yeah. Yeah, cause, yeah, such an important conclusion to that sentence, because, you know, without that awareness that we took with us into the dream that says, I am not the victim of the world I see because my true identity is outside the world and is the same as everyone else's true identity. Without that awareness, trying to do it on our own as a seemingly separate self, as a so-called individual, there's no way out. It's foolproof. You know, it's, from the ego standpoint, it's just not God-proof because we have a decision-making faculty in our minds that allows us to choose against the ego's infinite variety of illusory, unfulfilling options and instead choose, against the guilt, which never really happened in truth. But we need to look at the things that trigger it. And that's where the classroom of looking at the things in the world that upset us in whatever way and whatever degree as our classroom for forgiveness, and realize that if I'm upset by something someone said about me, you get back to the example of some condemnation of the author of the book we're reading from, the responsibility, of the people who made those comments is their condemnation of Gary would be something they need to deal with. Now, in Gary's case, it would be his responsibility to look at his how he sees the people who made those remarks. And just as it is, all of us are the same. I actually came up with a little shorthand, very pragmatic thing that I find helpful sometimes when I remember it, which is to be responsible to is half the effort is compared to being responsible for someone else. So numerically two and numerically four. Yeah. And because basically if we say, well, I have to, change, the other characters in the dream, we're kind of missing the point is that I really just need to be responsible for how I see everyone else. I don't have to be responsible for how they see me. I just need to be responsible to, all the others in my dream. And use the Holy Spirit's guidance to see that everyone in truth is innocent. Now, it doesn't mean the behavior at times abhorrent or ridiculous or heinous or whatever. You know, we see all kinds of crazy stuff and turn on the TV or read the news on your computer or whatever. And amazing the crazy things that happen, and also the things that seem wonderful in a kind of a special way. But everyone's a mixed bag. We're all dealing with these two thought systems until we, over time, gradually, and sometimes maybe many lifetimes, as this book we've been reading suggests, take the opportunity every moment and generalize to the point where we see everything as an opportunity to see beyond the specialness, beyond the form, and see the real beauty that can't possibly change. So.
Well, that's very well said. I love that. And what I've really come to understand is I have a very limited point of view. I don't really know everything that's happening. In fact, I know very, very little of what's happening. And I learn that more as I lose, kind of my vision seems to be fading a lot more lately. And so, I realize even things I see, I don't really see what I think I see. But when you look at the scope of every individual ego experience in this world, and you think about their, why do people do the things they do? Like, right now we have, a president, and I'm not going to go into politics because that's not my goal here. But there are many, many people who think he's the greatest thing that ever happened. And it will, you know, argue with you, not argue, but their thoughts are, you know, God put him here. God's going to change the world through this man. This man is going to do wonderful things, and Jesus is going to return because, you know, they have all these ideas because they have a worldview and they have an education and a training and a belief system that says, this is a good thing. This is the right thing. And you'll find other people who will say, you know, oh, no, it's the worst thing because he's ruining the environment and he's doing this and he's doing that and all these different things. And that's a valid viewpoint, too. But what does it have to do with this character? It has nothing to do with the character. It has to do with my perception of the character based on my very limited point of view. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's why Jesus warns us throughout the course, you don't know. I mean, don't try to make decisions based on something you have no understanding of, no information on. You know, you can't correct a brother because you have no idea.
We're clueless, aren't we?
We're absolutely clueless.
I mean, but that's actually a happy realization that, you know, in a cosmic sense, we are all clueless, because as a first approximation, I keep coming back to my freshman college chemistry class where the instructor, you know, was teaching how to throw away variables in the denominator and numerator that were infinitely small, or, you know, many orders of magnitude smaller than things they were being added to. And so it says, you know, if you add a million, if you add two or three to a million, you can throw away the two or three and still get, you know, to three or four decimal places a perfectly accurate result. And now factor that into, you know, orders of magnitude more than we can imagine, even on the level of form, you know, when you get up to 10 to the 33rd power, for example, is the Planck space constant. I think 10 to the minus 33rd centimeters is the Planck space constant. The Planck time constant is 10 to the minus 44 seconds. I mean, so at the level of very, very small, we have no way of detecting that, you know, that kind of thing. And the level of very, very large in terms of cosmic, you know, even within the dream, you know, the cosmic time as we think of it as being, you know, how many billions of years old the solar system and the entire universe, and you know, how many parsecs and light years across, and, you know, it's staggering. But even regardless of whether you take the very large or the very small as a first approximation, even on the level of the dream, the form, we're clueless. But on the level of the awareness of the mind and all the things that are possible in the level of mind, it just, you know, goes beyond orders of magnitude to just, you know, the whole different realm that we're so clueless about as egos. But as spirit, when we rely upon the strength of that awareness that we took with us into the dream, that is aware of everything and has everyone's best interests at heart, it allows us to go beyond trusting our own good intentions because they're not enough, as the Course says. We discover that, you know, we can, with that guidance, holding that metaphoric hand, find our way out of this cavernous, labyrinthine maze that we made up for ourselves as dream figures, puppets, actors, movie stars, whatever metaphor works at the moment, right?
Exactly, exactly. Wow. And again, that macro, micro, macro, situation, really, it's within and without us. It's basically what we are. And you can go infinitely either direction because that's the power of the imagination of the Holy Son of God. You know, when we had a tiny man idea, it was, you know, Jesus says tiny, but tiny is like
relative to truth, not relative to what we think, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And getting into how huge or how small everything is, you know, you recognize, oh my God, you know, good thing that God put a limit on my ability to miscreate. Because if I could just keep making shit up, we would... We'll be here forever and ever. We'll never get out.
There's one line in Robin Williams' skit about the the Scot with a Scottish accent about the golfers. And he's talking about golf courses and how, you know, golf in general. And he's talking about, you know, like sand traps and lakes and all that kind of stuff on a golf course. He said, why do they do that? I mean, why not just have a straight shot between where you first hit the golf ball and the pole there, you know? And he says, they put shit in the way, you know? But that's what we do. You know, we put barriers to the awareness of love's presence, and we call that the universe. And that's the outer shield of oblivion. But the inner shield is the bigger barrier in truth. The secret dream is the idea that we threw God under the bus. We think we dashed perfect oneness against the rocks and into infinite number of little pieces that we call individuals, and there's no way to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, and we feel horrible about that. Not in a conscious way most of the time, but every time we have a twinge of guilt or irritation or pain, whether it's psychological or physical, because they're really the same, ultimately, that there's, you know, all those irritations and annoyances are just triggers and teachable classroom moments for us to remember that we can and rightly should listen to our inner kindness teacher and choose against the ego's interpretation for the veracity of form and just say, okay, you know what? There's another way of looking at this. I could see peace instead of this. I could see, the perfect innocence of every seeming individual involved in truth, not necessarily in the level of form of behavior, but in truth, and walk away with, a peaceful outcome to every situation.
Well, and that's what gets the shit out of the way.
Exactly.
Really, that is what does it.
It is.
That's what does it. You know, I could see a straight line between where I am now and the T, you know, the hole. So,
yeah.
You know, that's what this does for us. It doesn't take away the difficulties and the variety of the world. Believe me, and I know Gary's going to be talking about some of this stuff here in a minute whenever we get back to the, but I do want to just emphasize that the reason, the primary reason that we don't just give up this dream and go home right now is because we're still entertained by the show.
Right.
You know, everything, it's the same stuff over and over and over and over. You know, romance, boy meets girl, boy, you know, whatever. All that stuff, same stuff over and over and over.
Boy victimizes girl, girl victimizes boy.
Those are the details.
I mean, yeah, that's the special love, special hate, you know, sequence
exactly.
Typically is the, you're right.
The victimization and then the hatred and then let's get back together and, you know, all that stuff, crucify myself, attack you. But all of that stuff, that is what we cherish. We cherish our individual contribution to it. We cherish the thing that flavors and colors it for us. We cherish the thing that makes it seem like not just, you know, plain white bread, but, you know, here's a club sandwich. You know, that's the difference between.
Ooh, that's better than a bunch of molecules of carbon and other ones thrown together in a attractive form that we think we like, right?
Exactly. But we like it that way and we cherish those things.
Right.
So if I said to you, Bruce, you could be awake right now and in heaven right now and know everything and be one with all and have just nothing but sheer joy for the rest of eternity, would you say to me, yeah, but then I can't have this club sandwich?
Well, that ties into beautifully to something I remember hearing that Ken and particularly Gloria Wapnick did as an exercise, I think probably back in Roscoe, New York, where they asked one of their some of the workshop participants, if there was like a little button in front of you that you could press it and your ego would be immediately, you know, dissolved, vaporized, and you would experience the peace of perfect oneness, and nothing else after that, would you, you know, and ask for a call for hands and, you know, not many hands went up. And, you know, again, like you're just saying, the take home lesson is that our resistance is enormous because we still think we're getting something from the world. And it's very rude sometimes to suggest, you know, even I found myself last night watching this movie, you know, and my wife has studied the course with me a little bit, but she's not really a course student. And my two dear, also dear friends, from up the hill, came down to watch the movie with me. You know, they're into metaphysics and all kinds of, you know, new age stuff as well. And we talk a lot about those things, but in terms of, you know, the course's metaphysics, not so much. And so I just made a passing comment at one point while there was a lull in the movie about having, you know, the great metaphysics and in the dialogue and, nobody commented on it. I took that as a sign. It's like, okay, shut up, Bruce. That's enough. and don't go there, you know, because our job is not to change anyone or make the world different. And that was a good reminder for me. It's like my task, my career in truth is to forgive. And it has nothing to do with these other characters that appear to be, inhabiting my dream with me, you know. Whether it's a life mate or a neighbor or a politician in Washington or a dictator in Asia or whatever.
You know? Or whatever.
yeah, exactly.
All right. So
meanwhile.
22 minutes. Let's see. How much we have? Okay.
Oh, we got a solid 20 minutes.
Solid 20 minutes. That's right. We're just going to head into that book and start reading again. And, do you want to read this about, Hawaii? This brings
sure,
me.
Sure.
Okay.
This brings to mind one of my favorite subjects, Hawaii. Cindy and I had just got back from leading our annual Hawaii retreat, this one on the island of Oahu. We've held several retreats on the Big Island and one on Maui. We held this one at a beautiful place called Haiku Gardens, the same place we got married 7 years before. Haiku Gardens is on the windward side of Oahu near the pretty town of Kailua, where we stayed for 12 nights. Incidentally, Kailua Beach is one of the best beaches in all of Hawaii. The retreat was held over the course of 5 days, so we had a week to explore the island ourselves. I've loved Hawaii since I was 11 years old and saw the Elvis movie Blue Hawaii in 1962. After that two-hour movie, I was hooked on Hawaii, but I was never able to put together enough money to go there until I was 35. Back in 86, I spent a week on Oahu and a week on Maui, and they were two of the happiest weeks of my life. It would be another 13 years before I could afford to go back. In 1999, I finally did. I savored every minute of it, not knowing if I would ever be able to return. Then in 2003, my first book, Disappearance of the Universe, was released and my life was changed forever. And I have to say mine was changed when I first read it 4 years later. Okay. I died and went to heaven, credit card heaven. In the last 13 years, I've been to Hawaii another 14 times or so. I've been to all six of the major islands you can go to. My love for Hawaii was not diminished with familiarity, and Cindy and I are thinking seriously of moving there in 2 or 3 years. Right now I have projects I'm working on in my second favorite state, California, but I can see finally making the big move to Hawaii in the not-too-distant future. Martin and Persa had told me that if I ask the Holy Spirit if I should move to Hawaii, don't be surprised if the answer is yes. But I'm sure the Holy Spirit would also counsel me that no matter where I should appear to be, I should never stop practicing the Course's brand of forgiveness. I love all of the islands. They all have their own personality, yet they are all Hawaii. So which illusory island would I choose to live on? For me, it's a no-brainer, Oahu. It's not appreciated the way it should be. When people think of Oahu, they think of its city of Honolulu and its Waikiki Beach, so they assume it's very commercial. Well, first of all, Waikiki is cool, very cool. But that's just the beginning. The whole island is full of hidden gems, too many to count. If you visit Oahu, I'd highly recommend you take the Circle Island Tour with one of the tour companies. You'll start to get the idea. Oahu gives you the best of both worlds. If you like the city life and want to be entertained, there's no shortage of good shows and restaurants, most of them less expensive than L.A. But if you want the beauty of the outer islands, Oahu has many places that are just as exquisite as Maui. I've come to realize that just because the world is an illusion, it doesn't mean you can't have a good time. Just the opposite. You can have a great time and do it without guilt. It's true that you are guiltless. Heaven was given to you by God, and you don't have to earn it. But you do have to do the forgiveness work that it takes to undo the ego and return to reality in your awareness. So see, I'm slowing down after I get to the substantive stuff here. not that there's anything wrong with the conversation about Hawaii, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if there's something
tour guide stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's fun. Yeah, I wouldn't mind going to Hawaii again, too. But if there's something to forgive, then forgive it. But as Art and Persa and I have touched upon, the Course says if there's nothing to forgive at the time, then what you should do is celebrate. A Course in Miracles is not about sacrifice. In fact, there's a section in the course called The End of Sacrifice. If you think you have to give something up, that's making it just as real to your mind as when you make a false idol out of it. But there's a narrow road, one you can take where you don't make it real and end up enjoying it even more. That is the way of the course and the way of forgiveness. When Cindy and I were visiting Waikiki on this trip, we had lunch for a second time with my former wife, Karen, who lives in Oahu, and her partner, Dave. All four of us are course students. As I was sitting there in a restaurant on Waikiki Beach, across from the woman I was married to for 25 years, and beside the woman I've been married to for 7 years, I couldn't help but think, thank God for Jay and his course.
You know, it's funny. I just saw it just came up on one of my memories or something, a picture of the four of them at this meeting. I just saw that like yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Neat. Anyway. Okay. I think I can get to the next page. Yeah. The four of us had gotten together once before in California, and it took a lot of forgiveness for the four of us to be able to sit at that table together. Now here were the four of us having a happy lunch together in paradise. I told myself to always remember to forgive. It can lead to great and surprising things. But remember this also. When it's appropriate to have a good time, celebrate. I had done two books in Maine with Artin and Persa, and was now in the process of doing my second book with them in California. I didn't know if there would be a fifth book or not, but I couldn't help but wonder, if there was, would we be doing it in Hawaii? I had noticed the last couple of years that there seemed to be a kind of mini-movement afoot among a minority of students in the course community. Some people, certainly not a large percentage, but some, seemed to be depreciating the power and importance of the mind. Ever since A Course in Miracles was published in 1976, and the word got out that Helen Schuckman was channeling Jesus, a book would come every few years where the author would say they were also channeling Jesus. The followers of these books never seemed to hesitate to try to put them on the same level as the Course. But not only was the voice of Jay in these books nowhere as profound and beautiful as the voice of the Course, but after listening to my teachers during this series of visits, I realized these books were doing exactly the same thing they told me the world has always done with non-dualistic teachings. Devolve them into dualism. And I'm going to pause right there to kind of tie it into our previous conversation this morning about celebrity culture. And as you were saying something, Lynn, I had a little kind of mini aha moment thinking, well, it's not just the media that's about celebrity culture. It's really our entire the entire thought system of the ego. It's because celebrity and personality and specialness are the ego's bag, and it'll seek that out and make a big deal of much ado of nothing, as Shakespeare would say, out of personality and specialness and the celebrity, if you will, of whether it's famous or infamous, makes the headlines. When I worked for a company called Grass Valley Group in Northern California for a couple of decades, one of the first things I heard of is probably an industry meme that describes both newspapers, television, and radio, and all kinds of media, and certainly applies to celebrity culture. But if it bleeds, it leads. Meaning that blood, guts, and gore. They're part of the celebrity of
Jesus.
Putting the so-called historical Jesus on a pedestal because of martyrdom, which is exactly contrary to what he was sharing in his course and what Gary has just reiterated in this last few pages. It's not about specialness, and there's nothing wrong with celebrating, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you make it special. You just enjoy it and appreciate the gifts that each experience has for you to undo the ego, right? So.
Exactly. And what Gary is saying here, well, I'll let you finish reading
this. Oh, okay. I'll finish the paragraph and then go off from there. How's that sound?
Okay.
Rather than doing the course, the authors apparently found it a lot easier to make up their own course, and they were not committed to undoing their egos, which allowed the ego to block out the message of the Holy Spirit that said they were channeling. And just a quick comment to finish this is that it's incredibly challenging. So we need to let everybody off the hook, including course teachers and students who have enormous resistance, as we all do, to undoing the ego, and just kind of notice it. Give yourself a little moment for a gentle smile inwardly, and sometimes outwardly if it's appropriate, and just say, oh, there we go again. Our resistance is so enormous to this curriculum because we're so invested in that specialness, celebrity culture, that you know, the morbid fascination with blood, guts, and gore, and dissolution, and you know, denial and dissociation, and all that crazy stuff that is the ego's bread and butter, you know. So, anyway.
Exactly. And, you know, I've read a lot of those books. You know, Gary's books really are the only ones that I've read other than Ken Wapnick, of course. And, you know, basically that are uncompromising about what this course is about. Mm-hmm. But these other teachers, they don't like that Jesus says there is no world. They think that's a mean thing. There's people that...
What do you mean?
Say that. Yeah. And they think, you know, that's cool and that's not nice. And that takes away people's hope and that makes people feel bad. So Jesus couldn't mean that. So they do a channeled book from Jesus that makes the world real and says, you know, I mean, seriously, there's a couple fellas who have taken A Course in Miracles now and went through all of Helen's notes and, well, more than a couple, there's a whole group of people, went through all of Helen's notes and the, all the, what we call the urtext and all these different things and put together a whole new version of A Course in Miracles with footnotes and, all kinds of things, little stories about Helen and Bill and the whole point being that they try to put back anything in everything that made it seem like the world is real. And, you know, I got that book. People are raving about that book. You know, I'm looking at it. I'm going, there's a reason Jesus took this out. There's a reason that Jesus, these are Helen's imagination and, you know, Jesus, it's very specifically, you know, take this stuff out of here about sex and not because, but because sex has nothing to do. There's nothing in the course about food. There's nothing in the course about, mountain climbing. There's nothing in the course about, any other activity that humans do. Why should there be, you know, specifics in there about sex in particular? I say sex, so nasty sounding, but, but it just, it's baffling to me. You know, why would you want all those things in there? Because you have, you deny the truth that not the non-duality of a course that is so uncompromising, you can't handle the truth.
It's the face of God, if you want to use that metaphor. It's that we're all afraid of because we're still partially invested in the ego thought system. Now, the very fact that these books, you know, in some respects pay homage to the course, whether directly or indirectly or whatever, is a testament that there's an acknowledgement, you know, on some level that these works are profoundly, you know, profoundly profound and uncompromising and you know, I can understand how people would want to, you know, add their own two cents kind of thing for various reasons kind of thing. But at the same time, if, you know, I kind of try to use the metaphor of if someone took a, found a rough draft of one of my two books and published it, I probably wouldn't be thrilled about it. I'm not sure if I would get really upset, but I, you know, might do some, you know, take some behavioral action against that. And, you know, at the same time, if I look at, you know, any condemning thoughts about, you know, the alternative, versions of the course or whatever, if I think that those are, a barrier to my peace, again, that those become my classroom. Just as taking the FIP version of A Course in Miracles as being the only way that anybody's gonna find happiness and peace, that's just as silly, because it's never about the form. And I mean, and Plato, I think, was a primary influence on Helen's thinking, along with Shakespeare and Freud and a few others, the notables, and our planet's history. But the Platonic ideal was that it's never about the form. There's the perfection exists in the mind, and I think that's why this chapter is coming back to this. Interestingly enough, I think you were referring to the Circle of Atonement book that was 900 pages or something like that that came out recently.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Bob Rosenthal, I was actually thinking of this before my eyes glanced across the next page we're about to read.
Bob Rosenthal too.
Yeah, anyway, he did a really thoughtful review of I can't even remember the name of the expanded book that's got
the CE version.
Okay, yeah, whatever they call that. Anyway, I thought a very thoughtful review. He said, you know, for scholars of the course, this could be really useful and interesting. I think he was very even-handed about it and concluded with, you know, for most students, and this is again my paraphrasing tremendously, so is that, you know, it may not be necessary, you know, but it might be of interest to, you know, people have scholarly or historical or academic interest in the course. And, you know, it might be helpful to, you know, for some people. So, you know, there's no need to condemn. It's just, I think it's important to point out, you know, what the differences are. And as you pointed out very beautifully, is that there's not a whole lot of writing or teaching out there. There's a few exceptions, but not a lot that is as uncompromising as the course itself. From the Foundation for Inner Peace and Gary Renard's work, you know, I mean, because yeah. Really, those two in particular, and in Ken, of course, yeah, Ken.
Oh, Ken, of course,
sort of including Ken's work in that, you know, FACIM material,
The Course in Miracles, the workbook and the manual for teachers, and the pamphlets, and Ken's writings.
Yeah.
Really, pretty much the body of work.
But the Ken Gary School, as I sometimes call it, is you know, it's a, you know, a steep ascent, you know, but that's okay, because, you know, we can pause along the way and enjoy the view and you know, watch other Sisyphuses like ourselves, you know, with pushing their rock up the hill, and sometimes being chased by the rock as it falls down again, and as we're doing the same thing, you know, but it's all fine, you know, we're all going to reach the same destination, which is the perfect peace we never left. So, you know, we can just watch our condemnations, watch our judgments, and say, oh, there I go again, making a big deal out of the level of form, people's front of Judea, Judean people's front. You know, it's the same silly, trivial distinction about, you know, comparing one illusion to another and making that a big deal, right?
Making it a big deal. And you know, I just was thinking as you were saying all that, it's equally that I should worry that people are going to be confused by reading another version of the course. People are confused by reading the FIP version of the course. So if you're going to be confused, you're going to be confused.
Yeah, exactly. The resistance comes not from the form, but from the decision of the mind. I think that's one of the important points here.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I will continue reading. How about that?
Okay, great.
So Gary is still speaking. He says, I was sometimes reading incredible statements from people who describe themselves as course students, such as, we've got to get away from the mind. It's the ego mind that caused the problem in the first place. We can't look for the answer there. Another said, the Holy Spirit is passé. And yet another, let's see, thank God we don't have to study the course anymore. I like that. And you know, I was going to say this too. Bob Rosenthal also did a really wonderful review of A Course of Love. If you go on Amazon.
Okay.
So,
I haven't read that one. Okay.
Yeah, it's really good. And raised my respect for Bob Rosenthal quite a bit. Actually, I didn't even know who he was hardly.
Overdue for having another conversation with him, because we've been doing occasional video conversations.
Oh, cool.
I put on ICM blog. There's two or three out there already. The first two being about his wonderful book, From Plagues to Miracles. So.
Right. And yeah, is that the new one that just came out?
No. There's another one he's working on.
Yeah. I knew he was working on a book.
He's working on a series of books. I hope I'm not giving his antenna away prematurely, but he's working on a series of books about the course. So.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
But yeah, his review of A Course of Love is really good. And, okay. You know, I've probably, I could go and look and probably he's got them for others as well. But, you know, it's very clear, you know, he's very clear, you know, that, you know, this is good stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. But it seems like Jesus is, basically contradicting himself, which is, you know, of course, he says there is no world, and then he comes in this other course and says, "Yes, the world is love, is real, and you must love it." But
that kind of reiterates, you know, your previous point from a few moments ago, which is, you know, the course on its own, because of Jesus's, you know, kind of alternately going back and forth, you know, sharing from the Holy Spirit's perspective, and then, you know, kind of assuming the ego's voice to parody it and show how ridiculous it is. You know, there's enough of that already in the course that is challenging for, you know, even seasoned course students at times to recognize, you know, which voice Jesus is coming from, either the this is the real deal, or the I'm parroting, you know, lampooning the ego now, you know, listen up, in no uncertain terms, and he's, you know, doesn't mince any words when he does that, as we all know, right?
Exactly, absolutely. okay, so sorry, I got something in my throat here. Okay, so anyway, these course students, and course students say some pretty silly stuff. I'm on many forums and I hear lots of it. But you know, I hear really good, you know, since I have that run that Yahoo group for the disappearance of the universe.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
people that come into that group have very, very clear understanding of things, and yeah, is yeah. really wonderful, the discussions that we have. Cause, mm-hmm. you know, not, and if there's any BS that comes up, one of us three, Marcy or Aussie and I, really, I think help people understand, why that's not acceptable.
Yeah, so, yeah. Kudos to the three of you and all the other participants over the years, because it's such a great resource for course students. Yeah.
It is a wonderful thing. Yeah, yeah. And I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity. Actually, we're at 9:29 now. Your time. I think I'm going to mark
reread
my
this
book.
Paragraph and
yes.
Next time.
Let's go back and reread this paragraph. Because I think this, you know, it's good. People get very confused. And when they have these other books that come up, and, you know, people are saying, this is Jesus saying this, and, you know, we've got, you know, live channelings of Jesus all day, every day. You can go, you could go on YouTube or go on Google and find it happening all over the world all the time. And, you know, it's hard for me to understand, you know, why he would be so contradictory. Obviously, it's our own perception of what we're hearing. Poor Helen. She didn't want to be hearing Jesus.
yeah, I was just thinking as you're talking about all the options available now that are spinoffs. You know, there's probably something, if you look for it, of what style of Birkenstocks did Jesus wear? You know, hear him share from his own history. You know, what his wardrobe looked like. You know, or something like crazy like that. You know, but
Jesus brand footwear.
Anyway, all is a pleasure, Lynn. I really enjoyed this conversation. And anyway, just in concluding, if you haven't seen the Amazon Prime movie Zoe, I'd highly recommend checking that out, because it's a lot of course stuff in there if you're looking for it. So
very good. I will check it out. And I'm going to be doing some videos. I've just kind of gotten the thought that a few people have suggested it. And, so I'm going to be starting to do some videos, and, I want to update my website to be more like, the 1-2 Radio website. I don't know if I can do that with what I have, because I have, WordPress and, Bluehost. Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
another conversation.
That's what I'm working on. That's another conversation. But that's what I'm working on. And I'm also working on shifting over ACIM Gather from PalTalk to Zoom.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out how to make that work. Uh-huh. So that may be a point where we can actually get together on Zoom.
Sure.
and see each other and everything.
I use Zoom for several meetings and study groups every week, notably Lynn Corona and Tim Wise's Tuesday and Thursday morning, which you can find on sfacim.org, the announcements about that, and also the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center website. And since I help maintain both of those sites, I know them well. And I highly recommend Lynn Corona and Tim Wise's Tuesday and Thursday morning online classes. They're just wonderful. So
very cool. I'll get the link and put that in the room for folks, because that might be a lot of fun for us too, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, dear. Well, you have a great week.
It's wonderful. Likewise.
You, and we'll start back again next week. And I think we did pretty good this week.
We did for about, yeah, that's good.
All right.
Have a great week.
So I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Iris. This mic is all yours.